Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 75 of Season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film, Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off the week is Niall McGowan of the Bat Minute. Welcome back to the show, Niall.
Well, happy to be here, Rob. I think I should also mention as well, in the brief interim between this film coming out in cinemas and then me seeing it on like VHS, you know, couple of months to a year later, I did experience in school people using the word foobar and me not knowing what it meant. And so
you're up them? Like, is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, I was up them for a while. People wouldn't tell me what it meant. They were just like, oh no, you just kind of laugh. It's like, ah, doesn't know, et cetera, et cetera. And then actually then watching the movie, been like, oh, there we go. And then finally, you know, freaking it all coming together, you know, down the line. But and I'm like, that's what it's from. And then down the line, been like, oh, that's what it means and stuff. Back in the day when you just didn't have a phone and Google to be like, oh, I'll find out what it means right now. But yeah, right. Back then you just stuck. People were just like, don't tell them. That was it. You were screwed. So
wow.
Yeah, unpleasant memories coming up.
Seeing so now you know. Like, now you know what FUBAR is, right?
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah. Now I know. It's a nightclub we're going to after recording. That's
What do you mean? I've been there every night this week. I keep looking for you, and you just don't show up.
It's like, I've still got the stamp in my hand. Yeah, I was there just last night. Where were you? I'll tell you, us going there and us not seeing each other, that's up beyond all recognition. Like, how's that?
Seriously. Yeah.
Well, what are the odds of that?
That's very true. It's problematic. Oh, we'll have to try and figure out if Upham figures out that it's not a German or a French word. Yeah.
So maybe it would have been a bit like him at the end, next to old Private Ryan, Upham like limping over with his cane, been like, I finally figured it out. Now I know what it means.
Sure. It's very true.
And then bumping into like, oh. Oh, you're Ryan, and then like whacking him over the head with the cane. Like, you know what we went through to get you, you piece of shit. Like, yes, of course I do. I'm very sad about it.
So minute 75 begins with DeWitt admitting why he's there, and ends with Mellish trying to remind the Germans who he is.
Mm.
So, you know, we ended things yesterday with you know, the men showing up at a. You know, a rendezvous point with a whole bunch of soldiers all around, a lot of them having bandages, you know, and as you mentioned, bandages with blood on them to show that they actually were injured. And then Miller started talking to, or actually an officer that's there named DeWitt starts talking to Miller. And he goes, and he started telling him what's going on. And he says, well, this one was mine, sir. I was the pilot. And he goes, 22 men dead. And I love the way that during the course of this, we hear shouting in the background. You know, we hear someone scream out, private, private, take care of. You know, as DeWitt is talking. Again, 22 men dead in this one glider is just, wow.
Yeah.
And he goes, I ended up over there without a scratch. Took my co-pilot's head right off.
And then like pull up Leland Orso. He's been through so much. I think his characters have been like, he's going from like, yeah, I was forced to kill someone with a razor sharp dildo. Also, yeah, man, my co-pilot's head got, you know, he got decapitated right next to me. I'm fine in both cases though.
Yes.
I got away with it, I guess.
There you go. And
he's a guy who does good trauma. He looks very haunted every time you see the guy. He's got a very haunted face,
right?
Maybe that's why he gets these parts. It's like, yeah, he looks like he's a guy who's seen some stuff, you know.
That's true. And basically, you know, he's explaining what happened to them, but Miller isn't really that concerned about that. He's like, okay, well, where's the unit? Who are all these people? He goes, well, the guys we came in with, sir, they headed off first night. Haven't seen them since. So they basically on, you know, June 6th, you know, the gliders came in first thing in the morning. So Or actually, they came in during the night, if I remember correctly, which means that already on June 6th, the men who survived, there were a number of different gliders that showed up at the same point here. He wasn't the only glider to come in and hit this particular point. But whoever survived got up and went out. Now, I don't know why he didn't go with them. And maybe because he's the pilot and he doesn't have anything really to do except for wait someone to come and rescue him and take him to safety.
I think he would have some kind of basic training in this, in terms of like, yeah, no, what is the policy? Like, yeah, if you were a pilot, then you're stuck out there. Are
No, you're not
you
going to go join the infantry.
supposed to fall in line with the?
No, you,
Yeah, but you know, you,
I don't think you'd go and
because you're.
you'd go and join the infantry. Your job is to get back back to your lines.
Yeah, go. I guess yeah, because we need you to fly a plane.
Exactly.
Is the thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to work out though, because it was the June 6th. Was this the day before? So this is June 7th now that
No,
we're in.
they all started their mission on June 9th.
Oh,
Okay.
okay. Because June 8th is my birthday, so I
Okay.
was just like, "Oh man, is this scene taking place about just the day before my
No.
birthday?"
This is
No,
taking place a
no.
few days after your birthday. Because right now we know it's at
Oh
least
wow.
the 10th, if not the 11th. Because they only show them go through one night, but it's possible that they've gone through more than one night. Because if I remember correctly, the end of the movie takes place on the 14th. So there's still a few more days
Yeah,
to
I
go
think they,
before
yeah,
that.
because they do give you the very prominence when you see spoilers, when you see Miller's
Grave.
the
Yeah.
cross at the end. It gives a specific date of death and stuff. Yeah,
Exactly.
so
Right.
yeah, oh, so close
Yeah,
though. Oh
you
man,
were close. You were close.
I've never had a film I've known consciously to take place on my birthday. So it's like, oh man, I'm
Well,
saving
I actually
my
have a
taking place on my
movie.
birthday.
I
That'd be
have a movie
amazing.
that has a story that takes place on the day I was born. Which is even more
Wow.
amazing. I'm a
What
little ashamed to say what movie it is, but that's a separate issue. But that's because a friend of the show, Sean German, discussed Pee-wee's Big Adventure, and the night of
Oh.
the crash with Large Marge was on my birthday, January 11th, 1974. So
That's incredible. Were you on for that episode specifically, or
no,
was it a random
I guess
coincidence?
it didn't work out scheduling wise. Sorry, I wasn't on it.
Oh man.
I requested it, but it didn't work. So that's fine.
Yeah.
That's perfectly.
Well, you say too, you're saying to say, it's like there's nothing wrong with Pee-wee's Big Adventure. That's a a perfectly cromulent movie. Of course, the precursor to Tim Burton's precursor to
That's right.
Beetlejuice, and then you go on from Beetlejuice to make a little film called Batman. So I see no shame in being born on a day cited in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. It's a perfectly good movie.
Exactly.
If you're cited in Big Top Pee-wee, then we'd have a problem.
Right. Okay.
But
I can see that. I can see that. DeWitt says, well, the guys who came in with Sir, they had it on first night. Haven't seen them since. I don't know why he would think that he would see them. They're not going to go and come back. We're continuing on our mission.
oh, we forgot our keys.
We forgot DeWitt. Yeah.
I got the pilot. Pack him up.
That's right.
Let's go.
Meantime, other guys keep showing up. One, two, half a dozen at a time. Then some officer will come along and patch them together, a mixed unit. Head off to make trouble, sir. So, I mean, it's interesting that this particular place has now become, this rendezvous area where, you have people coming with all the injured that show up here, and you can see in the background, and we'll probably talk about it more next week, a whole bunch of dead bodies and being covered that are covered up there also. So it's just interesting that DeWitt is apparently the only person here that was not injured that is still there, and he was also sitting, nonchalantly till Miller showed up. He even let Miller walk past him until he called out to him.
Yeah.
The whole thing's just interesting the way that they do it. And then we hear someone screaming in the background, "Water! I need a canteen over here!" And at
That's one of the, like some of the background chatter. I wonder like how much of it's improv and how much of it's very specific. Like we need this specific line to be, so they have like an extra in the background, kind of shout out these specific things over and over, or is it just like just shout out general, things that people would say in this scenario, kind
It's
of thing.
very possible. I don't know. Don't know. Right. But that's a great question. You know, I didn't look up the script in this for this movie. So, you know, I couldn't tell you if it was something that was in the script or, but it's also a lot of times the script is changed later on. You know, it's updated when they do add in, you know, different people saying things and stuff like that. So, you know, that I couldn't tell you. And, you know, at this point, Miller decides he's going to actually tell him why they're there. And he goes, we're looking for a private James Ryan. He's in bigger company, the 506th of the 101st. And again, it's just really funny that, I mean, we've mentioned this numerous times. They really expect someone to be able to know who Ryan is. You know, it's like there are thousands upon thousands of U.S. soldiers around here. And do you know a private James Ryan? And it's interesting that he doesn't say here that he's looking for private Francis, James Francis Ryan, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So, but the thing is, though, at the end, how do they find Ryan? It's literally through, but like, hey, anybody know this guy?
Yes, but
randomly coming across
100%. But it's just very funny that up until now, you know, it hasn't helped them very much by doing that. And he goes, no, you got me, sir. A lot of guys come in and out of here. And I love his response. A lot of guys come in and out of here. He doesn't even say a lot of guys come in and out of here, and I have no idea anyone's names. You know. And then Miller screams, up him. Yes, sir. Check out that squad. See if Ryan's in it. Yes, sir. And, you know, they've reached the point where they just want to get this mission over with already. They want to find Ryan and move on.
Yeah. It's I'm totally understandable. Yeah, of course. As well, though, because you're constantly battling with the whole thing of, like, one That's guy. Right. We've got to do all this for That's one right. guy, you know? It's such a pain in the ass, Correct. You know.
And then we get a few shots of Wade tending to some of the men, and then he looks up and calls out to Ryben and goes, Ryben, smell that leg over there. Find out if it's south of cheese. And then we see Ryben, you know, take out his cigar, looks down, smells the guy's leg, makes a really really strange face. You know, being completely disgusted about what he has just smelled, and just shakes his head. No.
Yeah. No. I always interpret it as been like, though he's kind of like, it's almost like a little jittery he's doing. As it smells like cheese, and that it's such a pungent smell of cheese. But then I was going to ask, which cheese do you think it smells of? Is it a blue cheese? Is it a Stilton? Like, how stinky is it?
Well, I was trying to figure out what does he think. Like, what's the reason to smell? Is it possibly like gangrene or something like that? That he wants him to smell it?
I'd be probably again like a sign of infection.
A sign of infection. If you have an infection in your leg, it'll smell.
Yeah, I guess it probably would if it's left untreated after a while. If it starts. I can imagine that just being a thing. Like, yeah, if it's, you know, you leave a wound untreated, after a while, it'll start to smell, you know, and the closest thing will be like, it smells a bit like cheese. And then, and that's when you know that it's infected. And it's like, oh, well, that's, you're boned in that moment, I suppose.
Right.
That was my interpretation. Anyway,
okay. Please. And I just quickly looked it up, and you were 100% correct. I didn't even think about the fact that it was infection. Oh, I was thinking along the lines of gangrene, but, apparently if there's a rotting smell, so they should have asked them if it smells like eggs, maybe.
I know I've had maybe it's a bit of a TMI scenario, but I had an infected toe during the year, and after a while I started to be like, wow, what is that smell? Oh, that's what it is. Like, it's, you know. So yeah, infections do not smell pleasant.
Well, it was a good thing. It's a good thing they didn't have Ryben around to ask him to check out that smell.
Yeah.
You
know. It's kind of much more specific though. It's like, well, what cheese do you want this to smell like specifically? It smells a bit like mozzarella. It's like, mozzarella doesn't have a smell. Are you crazy? It's like the mildest cheese.
Exactly.
It's like, I want a proper cheesy smell. Like, are you talking about like American like cheese in a can? Like, that kind of, or are you talking about actual cheese? Like, what are we doing?
Well, they didn't have cheese in the can back in 1944.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, America has been making crap food for a long time. Okay,
maybe.
So it was one of the first things they gave to the natives was yeast in a can, and that's why there was so much.
Exactly. And then Wade takes that the response from the nonverbal response from Ryben and just shakes his head and goes, "What?" And but we already know what's going on there. there isn't much beyond that from that perspective. And then the shot changes and we get to see Mellish in the background. Having a little fun. You know, he's watching all the German prisoners walk by, you know, hands on their heads, and he says to them, Juden. And then we hear someone say, keep moving. And he goes, Juden. And he like starts to pull out his dog tags to show them something. And that's where this minute ends. Basically.
Yeah. For the final minute, I was glad to get a little bit of Adam Goldberg in there. I do love him as an actor. He's another one, another performer. Used to be so jealous of his hair back in the day. I always wanted like the big Adam Goldberg buffont you see him have sometimes. It's like, oh man, that guy's
yeah. When he was on Friends, he had that awesome.
I think it was mostly from Friends was what I was thinking. The thing too, him and Giovanna Ribisi is like probably the two best guest stars on Friends though. Although Frank Jr. is like he's a good recurring character, but like Eddie. Like Adam Goldberg's character in Friends was like
he's completely nuts. Like,
that was one of the best. You know, I think Friends has sort of fallen on hard times in the public opinion now because people are like, oh, it's very dated and you know, so popular. And the people will turn against the popular thing because it's popular, that kind of thing. But the Friends was good.
Yeah,
it's hype, you know, and that whole era. Yeah. Eddie moving in with Chandler and just like the becoming increasingly aware of how much of a nut job he was and stuff was just fantastic. And yeah, Adam Goldberg played it perfectly. And then I mostly also know him from Dazed and Confused, of course, where he's part of a trio in it. It's him, Anthony Rapp, and then Mariana Ribisi, the twin sister of Giovanni Ribisi. So there you go. That's why everything's connected. I used to have such a thing for her in Days and Views. It's just so cute in that movie. And also very envious of Adam Goldberg hair in that.
Yeah. Okay. Understandable.
Yeah. I think I wanted to be an Adam Goldberg with his, you know, his slightly tan skin and his good head of hair. And I always was a Giovanni Ribisi with his gaunt pallor and his pale face and his sunken eyes and his receding hairline. It's like, no, I want to be an Adam, but I am a Giovanni. I think it's the harsh reality I've had to face over the years.
And, basically when he says Juden, he's saying to them, you know, I'm Jewish. That's his, it's the Yiddish, the German way of saying Jews. You know, trying to taunt them at this point.
I think that's the thing. It's a little interesting thing with Goldberg himself always kind of plays characters who are slight assholes as well. Like he always plays someone who's a bit of a mm-hmm. dickheadishness about him and stuff. So that's is an interesting choice because him taunting is very understandable. It's like, what are they there for? It's because you know you people are you're at war with my people. Like you've started massacring. The Jewish population, but because Adam Goldberg carries such a swagger of asshole about him too, it comes across as so mean that he's doing this. But at the same time, it's like, well, it's totally understandable that he's doing it as well, you know. So he's just really mockingly saying like, that's right, one of us got you, you know. So
exactly,
but great character actor, not used enough and stuff. Like you know, he doesn't pop up as much as he used to back in the day. Yeah, one of those. That whole day, the 90s had a great roster of indie movie actors who pop up in things all the time. Giovanni, Adam Goldberg, and, you know, most of the cast of Dazed and Confused, basically, your Rory Cochran, things like that. They've all kind of fallen off into like DSI every now and again. That's about what you get out of them. That's a tragedy, you know.
Yeah.
Except for Giovanni, he's doing great.
Well, as long as James Cameron keeps making Avatar movies, he's got something to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. He's just like it's like oh but you know how long is it going to take to make the next one? As long as I'm getting paid, Jim. Like, I can't wait 10 years. Oh, that might have been him having a conversation with Jim Cameron, though, but like, you know, oh, wait until Avatar 6 comes out. Like, what if we don't live that long?
All right, we'll wait till number 4. We'll split it. Exactly.
next one will come faster, I promise. It's not going to be another 10-year gap.
Right, and that's how this minute ends. So every Friday, we have a segment called Filmmaker Friday, where my guests will give their top 5 Steven Spielberg-directed movies. So once again, why don't you start with your number 5 and work your way up?
I also wanted, just for the sake of contentiousness, I wanted to put in Poltergeist, even though it's supposed to be a Tobe Hooper movie. But I rewatched Poltergeist this year, and that's such a Steven Spielberg movie. It's like, you know that he actually directed it. Like, whatever they can't say for legal reasons. There's all the people saying that goes always Steven Spielberg there. He was always the one giving them directions. And you watch that movie, because there's nothing about Tobe Hooper about this. It's a 100% a Steven Spielberg movie. But because I can't technically say that, I'll only put that in as an honorable mention. I'd actually put number 5 would be Saving Private Ryan. Phenomenal movie. Innovative. Influential. It's just, changed not just war movies, but just any action movie since. Like, it's just everything. There's so much of this and The Matrix coming out.
That's right.
A year of each other, really changed the scope of cinema, like in a big, big way. Those two films, and just in terms of how things are filmed, in terms of high octane action and stuff. So, and also, but not the focus on the action. Also, really good in terms of how it's portrayed the characters and how it's written, how it's performed. Not flashy in that way, but you get dab hands like Tom Hanks or your Jeremy Davies or your Barry Peppers and stuff like that. And they can do this work phenomenally. So, great movie. Then number 4, I'll put, OG classic, Jaws. There's a reason why Jaws is as claimed as it is. And it's because, again, this is another thing, though. Getting into the top of the Spielberg, it's just like, well, his biggest ones are his best. And for a reason. And it's just like, he's a guy who really comes down to, like, the popular thing is popular for a reason. So why is Jaws so acclaimed? It's because it's a perfect film. It is why Jaws is so acclaimed. There's literally, you watch it and you're like, there's no flaws there. That was great. You watch it a million times, you're like, it was fantastic every single time. You know, it still works so well that, like, you could see it. Much like, Back to the Future still has a tension at the end. Whether they're going to get the wire connected to the clock tower in time, because it's just so well put together. Spielberg production, obviously, as well there, too. But the end sequences of Jaws are still so tense, even though you've seen them a million times. It's because this guy knows how to make, he knows how to get your goat. He knows how to, put together, he knows how to compose a scene, basically. Just Jaws just has to, everyone knows it's good. You don't need to explain why it's good. Then I put Schindler's List, number 3. Schindler's List is not one that I return to that often, because it's such a dark, ponderous film. But sequences in that film that are like nightmarish and stuff. It's really very, very powerful material. Spielberg just doing it perfectly. Treating it with the respect it deserves and stuff. And a weird thing actually recently, because a friend of mine owns, he doesn't own a restaurant. He's the head chef in a restaurant in Liverpool called Lunia. If anyone's ever in Liverpool, make sure to check out Lunia. And Ralph Fiennes was doing a production of Macbeth last Christmas. And every day he came in to Lunia to have his breakfast. So he went in and got these Spanish eggs and stuff. Apparently lovely man. Everyone said he was, Ralph Fiennes was just, most approachable guy in the world. Almost to a fault, though, because apparently my friend was saying one of the waiters went over and was just like, oh, you're that guy. You're that guy from the stuff. And Ralph Fiennes had to be like, yes, I am. And it's just like, what films are you in? And Ralph Fiennes had been like, well, I was Voldemort and I was in Schindler's List. And the guy was like, Schindler's List is one of my favorite films. Who are you in it?
And Ralph Fiennes, that was one of your favorite films.
I was the guy. It's one of your favorite films. I was like the head Nazi in it. You're the bad guy, the big villainous Nazi who's in every other scene. Yeah, that was. And finally, he had to get out of his phone to show him a picture of him in Schindler's List to be like, yes, that's me right there. So, which is a miracle. You think Ralph Fiennes at that point would be like,
seriously,
get the hell away from
me. You got to give him credit.
But yeah, so yeah, pay patience of a saint to go through that and be come out the other side. But like, oh, well, what can you do? Like, I would just put me off ever going out to eat ever, you know? But yeah, so phenomenal bit of work. Then another movie I don't return to all that often, but mostly because it just has a lot of emotional nostalgia attached to it, is E.T., which is still, you know, don't watch it that often. But what's in the way, like, I don't watch Edward Scissorhands all that often. It's because, like, oh, it's a great film, but it's just too sad. It's too emotional. It's too much. Like, I can't go in there all that often. And I said, too, like, you know, the score of E.T. is so phenomenal. And everything put together about it is just so... It's got that thing of, like, the sci-fi whimsy, but also it's clearly very personal to Spielberg himself. He's put a lot of his heart and soul into, you know, the portray, you know, conveying the relationship between E.T. and Elliot and stuff. I say, too, I love a good spooky thing. So the fact that it does have a very spooky opening, I love that now as well. And, yeah, this was one of the big things of just, like, you know, of scenes that will crush you in a film. It's like, oh, E.T. leaving at the end. Where it's just like, why does he have to go? Why can't he just hang about? Why can't he just come and visit and stuff? Like, what's going on here? But yeah, so that one I'll put is number two. Great film. And then number one was a no-brainer for me, is just Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park, much like Jaws, just an absolutely perfect film. First film I ever saw in the cinema was Jurassic Park. And yeah. So would have been like seven, I think, at the time. And yeah, just dominated my life for such a period of time. I don't know if it's not as emotionally engaging as E.T. or like Schindler's List or anything, but at the same time, it's just so beautifully put together. It's, again, fantastic score, fantastic set pieces, great central performances. It's it never gets boring. It never gets old. There was a period I went on, I'm sure you know Travis Bowe as well.
Yeah, of course.
He did the Real Comics Heroes. Mm-hmm. And so for some reason decided to cover Jurassic Park, even though I don't think it's strictly fitted within the remit, but he did Jurassic Park anyway. And I remember I hadn't seen it in years. And in the build up to watching it again, I was excited to rewatch it. Like, I still had that vibe.
That's cool.
That, oh, I get to watch Jurassic Park tonight. That's just going to be really fun. And then I sat down and watched it. And like 2 hours later, I was like, that was still great. That was still just perfect. Like, there was just, it still delivered on every single level.
Wow.
The effects still look fantastic. This everything about it was just, yeah, phenomenal stuff. And also, it's got the key element that some other Steven Spielberg films are missing, in that he cast Jeff Goldblum in it. Which is just a gateway into making your film that little bit better. It's just Jeff Goldblum's in it somewhere. You know, it's an easy win. Like, you know, you could have made Saving Private Ryan a little bit better had, you know, Private Ryan turned out to be Jeff Goldblum instead of Damon. Like, what a world we were living in then.
You know? No, he would have been a little too old for the role. But
he would have made it work. He would just unbutton the shirt and lay it aside again.
Maybe.
And then, like, are you James Francis Ryan? Oh, maybe I am. Yeah. But yeah, I know everyone's already seen Jurassic Park, so you don't need me to sell it to you. But if you've not seen it in a while, go rewatch Jurassic Park, and you'll discover that it's still really good. So. And that's when it came out with all those Jurassic World movies, each one was like a smack in the face to me, because it's like, what is this? This is nothing. Get out of here. You know, just don't waste my time with this material. Now they're doing another one with like Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
I was like, it's never came close again. That first one is so good, and it's such a perfect standalone film. It's like, why you bother? You know, but
exactly.
But yeah. So that's my Spielberg.
All right, trying to find
like some deep cuts, but at the same time, it's just like, no, he's just all his most popular things.
That's right.
Are popular,
yeah, for sure,
because they're the best thing.
Mm-hmm. So completely understandable. All right, thank you very much for that list, Niall. So Niall, why don't you once again tell people where they can find you?
Yeah. My main sort of flagship show is Bat Minutes, which is a show wherein we talk about the Batman movies minute by minute. We've got like five, six seasons done. We've done five whole seasons, a mini season on Return of the Joker. So five and a half seasons that are currently available, starting from 1989 onwards. But if you're a stickler, you might be like, well, you didn't start from the very beginning. We're going to now. Before we go anywhere near any of that Nolan territory, we're going back into the long, long ago to talk about Adam West's Batman the Movie from 1966 in this upcoming year. So if this is out at the end of January, we've not even started production yet, but like it will be coming. Summer of 2025, we should begin airing Batman the Movie the Minute. This is actually really, I didn't think that's like, yeah, that's what in my head now, that's what it's going to be called, Batman the Movie the Minute. So there we go. We should be chock full of guests and good times and getting into the nitty-gritty of a very silly film with a very storied cast and production and whatnot. So yeah, should be a good time.
Okay.
And it's available if you just Google Batman. I forgot to do the actual plug part where I tell people where to find it. It's on Spotify and all your podcatchers, and it's on YouTube, and it's here, there, it's everywhere. You type in Batman, you will find us.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movearoundminute@movearound.net. So, Niall, thank you very much for joining me this week. It's been a lot of fun.
It's always a pleasure.
Even if you didn't find the minutes to be as action-packed as you had hoped they would be.
To be fair, I'm a veteran at this. I know all minutes are good. Basically, you can turn any minute into gold if you find enough to talk about. I feel that we did. So. Always happy to come up, hop on for any minutes you may need.
Always appreciated, definitely. All right, so I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, earn this.
My solitude, you haunt me with reveries of days gone by.